It's time for the Taking Notes podcast with Julian Robichaud and Bruce Elgort.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 128 of the Taking Notes podcast. My name is Bruce Elgort, and I am here with
Julian Robichaud.
Julian, how are you?
I'm doing quite good. I'm cold just like everyone else right now because there's snow and cold weather all over the world, I think.
But yeah.
I'm good.
Good. We're having cold here as well as rain. Nothing as bad as it was around the Thanksgiving time where we had lots of ice and slick road conditions here in the Pacific Northwest. But you're in Atlanta, right? What's the temperature there now?
Yeah, this morning when I woke up, it was, I think, 28 degrees.
Wow, that's pretty
cold.
Something
like that. So, yeah, it's cold for us. We're having a pretty cold week this week.
Yeah.
But that's not what we're talking about today.
No, we're not. We're talking about Bob Balaban and his Google Drain Drain Google project, and Andrew Pollack about his second Signal product, and the culture at Lotusphere, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole first part of the podcast is really a lot of developer-type talk, and not in that we're talking code or anything, but just talking about things that you can do with Domino that are sort of non-traditional. You know, stuff where you're using Domino maybe as a back-end, but it's not really a notes app so much as it's something where you're using Domino for something, you know, pretty non-traditional. And I think that those are always kind of interesting projects.
Mm-hmm. And again, we also talked about the culture and some of its history and some other really interesting stuff that Andrew and Bob will share with you on the show. So shall we, Mr. Robichaud?
I think we shall, Bruce.
On the podcast today, we have Bob Balaban from Loose Leaf Software. Bob, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, thanks. How about you guys?
We're doing okay. We have two rock stars on the podcast today, you, and we also have Andrew Pollack from Northern Collaborative Technologies. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey, thank you. Good to be here.
Yeah, we had you guys on because you guys have both done some really untraditional things with Domino, right, Bob? You've done what, Bob?
Recently, I started a project I call Drain Google, which is, the idea of it is to use the Google Cloud APIs to pull all your stuff back. You know, Google has been really good at offering all these cool services to people for free with photos and mail and calendaring and document storage and website development and all this other stuff. And it occurred to me, you know, there comes a time when some people sort of sit up and look around and go, I don't want Google to have all my stuff. I want it back. So I created some Domino-based code to help you do that.
So what exactly does Drain Google do? I mean, is it a series of databases, agents? Is it done in real time? How does all this work, Bob?
At the moment, it's a prototype, and I focused on Google Docs just because, you know, mail is commonly transferred. There's many ways of doing it. You can use IMAP or other things. You could use the Google APIs to do that as well, but I chose not to start with that. I started with Google Docs, and it's a bunch of Java code that you would run to point it at your Google Docs account, and whatever it finds there, it downloads, and, you know, in this configuration, puts it in a Notes DocLib database, just an NSF created from the standard Notes DocLib template, which allows me to attach some metadata to the actual files as well. So you have, you know, a Word document or a PDF or something, it pulls it in, attaches it to a document in the Notes database. Any folder labels that might have been in Google Docs get transferred down as category labels and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So if you have, say, you know, a bunch of docs in Google, you know, they're in Google's format up on Google. So my question would be, when you know, drain Google and these docs do come down to an NSF database, Do they come down in a PDF, a doc format, an Excel format for sheets? You know, how does that work?
Well, you've actually hit on one of the issues with pulling stuff out of Google Docs, and that is that you have no way. Google Docs doesn't remember what the original format of the file was. So you could upload a GIF or a JPEG, and it'll handle it just fine. But there's no way using the Google APIs to look at that object and say, this used to be a GIF or a JPEG. There are certain clues you can pick up about certain files so that you know that they were probably a PDF or probably a spreadsheet or something like that. For those, you know, PDFs, I download as PDFs. The API lets you specify what export format you want Google to give you the file as. So I say, if I think this was a PDF, I ask for it as a PDF. If it was a spreadsheet, I ask for it as an Excel document. Most other things I ask for as a Word document, and that handles all the image types.
You know, Google, they advertise themselves as being just so open and kind of end-user friendly in terms of getting your data and stuff like that. I mean, why is it that you actually have to build a tool to do this? Is there not some Google way of just grabbing your documents that you've created?
You could use a browser to log into your account and select all your files and say, download this, and you'll get it as zip. But you still have to specify for each file what format you want. And if you had hundreds or thousands of them, it would be a little bit tedious. Then you'd still have to go, you know, and if you wanted them in a Notes doc lib, you'd still have to go manually attach them all and type in the metadata. So it's just an automated way of doing it. The goal with this prototype is to turn it into a real funded project and expand it to other areas of Google. For example, download Google Sites, Calendar, Contacts, Picasa stuff, you know, whatever you've got.
Okay, and I was going to say that's kind of the that's sort of where I was going, I guess, is you know, you're doing this with documents, and even though you can kind of do it already, it's good to automate that. So what do you think is the next big drain project that you want to work on as far as that goes? Do you have an idea for what besides documents you want to do next?
I'm easy. You know, anybody who wants to give me funding gets to pick what I do next.
Okay. In terms of the APIs then, is there pretty much an API for all of this stuff that you would want to do? Or do you think that you're in a
there
situation
is.
Where, okay, there is.
Yeah, it's a little tricky to sort of get started and learn how to use it, but it's not bad. I've done conference sessions and stuff on how it works. It's RESTful APIs. It's fairly well documented, and they give you good client-side object libraries. So if you want to not deal with atom feeds in XML format, you simply use the Google code library to write C# or Java or JavaScript or what, you know, they have a number of different language bindings for these things, and you just use it as an object API.
And we all know that, Andrew, you're such a big fan of the cloud, right?
Yeah, sure. The cloud is a lie, right? At some point, someone somewhere has a server.
Andrew, I'm being serious here. I mean, I've read your blog. We've had several discussions, and I'm trying to build on what Bob's built here, and that's that you aren't a big fan of the cloud, right?
Well, I think it's fine as long as you understand what you're getting into. I'm a Flickr user. I have the pro account. I put all my stuff up on Flickr. My iFi card launches stuff up there automatically. There's good stuff. But yeah, I mean, if you want that stuff back, you know, my setup is set up that I get it to Flickr, but it also goes to an archive on my own machine so that if I ever want to dump Flickr, I can just turn it off. Mm-hmm. You know, what worries me is when I start seeing, you know, the high school down the street converting to their every single teacher, every single workstation doing Google Docs. You know, well, they all operate on an open Wi-Fi environment. I mean, it would take me, you know, a few minutes with FireSheep and I could start doing all kinds of mischief down there. Are they really set up in a way that they're prepared to use that safely? Do they understand those implications? You know, I think there's a lot of question for a lot of companies as to where does it end? And I think Bob's product really ties into that, which is, you know, at some point you get to that oh heck moment where you start to say, well, wait a minute, all our stuff is out there in the cloud and I don't really want it there anymore. You know, how do you recover from that? And I think that you know, Bob's hit on one avenue to do that. There's got to be tools out there that say, give me my docs back, all of them, now, please, thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one thing that I've seen with the cloud before, not to go too much on a diversion, and that's where you have these app platforms like Salesforce.com and so forth, where it's not only your data that gets built and put on the cloud, right? It's also all the business logic. So, you know, companies that move to Salesforce.com and not only put their data there, but all these apps that they develop, if they ever need to get off, right, they're kind of screwed, because once you stop paying Salesforce, you're going to lose access to your accounts, your data, your business logic, all that stuff. So it's like, wow.
Yeah, I mean, if you let me throw a sci-fi quote out there, all this has happened before. The you know, we went through a round, you know, a dozen years ago where everybody was firing their IT department and having them rehired by, you know, an EDS or a CSC or IBM or somebody that would run their data center. And then, you know, it would turn and the reason why these IT directors like that is because they're really sick of these costs that keep coming at them, whether it's licenses or servers or new SANs or whatever. And, you know, the IT side comes to them and says, you don't really have a choice. We have to spend this huge amount of money. And it seems like they never feel like they have control over that half of the organization, which ultimately isn't the profitable part of the company. So they're looking at, can I fix cost this stuff and quit getting bothered? And so they tried it with outsourcing IT, and it cost them a fortune to bring it back because they had to rebuy all the equipment and remigrate all that stuff and rehire everybody. You know, now they're trying it with the cloud. It's another way to approach that same problem. You know, and that pendulum will swing back. There's a balance, and I think at a company beyond a certain size, you have a responsibility to maintain your own data. And for the really important stuff, I think you'll see them continue to do that.
Now, are you differentiating here between cloud and software as a service, or do you lump those together?
Well, yes and no. Again, at a certain size, it makes sense for a company. You know, the small business, the micro business, what we call here in Maine, medium-sized business. you know, these companies don't have the staffing or the manpower or, frankly, the infrastructure to support necessarily their own IT departments. So anything that works is great. But when you get up to a fairly good sized company, when you're starting to pull in, you know, $500 million a year or more as a company, you need to have your own stuff. You need to have control over your own assets. You need to have control over when things change. You need to have control over when the lawsuit comes and you have to freeze everything. How hard is it to get that data? I mean, you know, Google's answer to that right now is that they have an API and, you know, go nuts. Here you go. Go find your stuff. You know,
and they'll archive it for you.
Yeah, great. So, you know, how do you even know if you're in legal compliance? Where is your data actually living? There's all these issues that at some point, I think a lot of that bounces back. So it's a big market, but it's not the endlessly growing giant take over the world market that some people would like it to believe.
Do you think a lot of these companies are saying you guys are just old fuddy-duddy IT guys?
Well, I get that, you know, a lot. Yeah.
Me
as
too.
As an IT industry, we've really dropped the ball in terms of we keep making these cool, expensive, unexplainable, hard to manage things that we go to, you know, I say we, but I'm not even in a company that does this, but, you know, that we go to the boss and we go to the board and we say, you need to spend $60 billion now for your new SAN. Why? Well, because we have to store all this stuff somewhere, and then they get technical and they've really lost the trust of the business side of the house. And they do it repeatedly. It happens over and over and over. And each time, you know, we kind of go through this cycle, it's the next, how are we going to just fix cost this? How are we going to get away from these IT managers that are terrorizing our budget? Well, okay, let's outsource to service. They'll fix price it. Let's outsource IT. They'll give us a fixed price per desktop to manage. Let's, you know, I view it all in a very much the same kind of cycle.
Now, out of curiosity, Bob, have you, you know, you've kind of looked at pulling data down to Google or from Google, but have you actually looked at using those APIs to push data there for any clients who might want that? If you have people that say, okay, we're moving to Google and that decision's been made, are you looking at going the other way?
Well, let me put it this way. Before the current incarnation of Looseleaf Software, I actually worked for a company whose business was migrating mailboxes from Notes to Google. And I wrote a tool to do that. So yes, I have done code that takes Notes, mail, calendar, and contact data and pushes it into Gmail or Google Apps.
Okay.
It's a bit different from the download side, because when you're uploading, you know, you're taking a potentially a mailbox with, say, a million messages in it and saying, I need a batch process that's going to run unattended and transfer all this stuff with super high fidelity and super low error rate to some server that lives somewhere managed by, you know, aliens. And
I was wondering about this.
Yeah, the servers do funny things to you. You know, particularly, I don't know. I think this is somewhat common across cloud infrastructures, but Google is the one I know the best, so I'll talk about them. They do things like limit the number of things you can send them. You know, over for example, when their servers are busy, they don't let you upload more than one email per second per account. And that may sound okay until you do the math and say, well, at a million messages, that's 11 days to upload one mailbox.
Mm-hmm. You know, Salesforce is the same way. They have governors on your accounts for actually the number of transactions that a instance can use in a given time frame. Usually it's, I think, 24 hours and then at a month. So you have to write all your code and unit test all your code to ensure that you won't go above that limit, because if you do hit that limit, your instance just stops.
Google's not quite that bad. They just start throwing you errors back, and you'll upload a batch of 20 or 25 messages, and you'll get a status response that says half of these made it, and you know the rest you have to resubmit. And it's not, you know, Google's API is pretty good, but it has some shortcomings, and that's one area where I think they could have done a better job.
Mm-hmm. And Bob, you said before that this is a series of Java agents that populate a Notes database. Is it something that you would do on an account-by-account basis, or would it suck a whole organization's data down? How does it work?
Well, it has to log in to each account to get the documents in that account. So at the moment, it's more like, you know, here's my login and my password. Go fetch, Rover. It's a Java program that I run in Eclipse. I wanted it to be a Java agent, and unfortunately, there was a little limitation in Notes that prevented it from running that nobody at Lotus can tell me how to fix or work around yet. So I'm hopeful that eventually, yes, it'll be a Java agent.
Cool.
In the meantime, I just run it standalone or I run it in Eclipse.
Cool. Let's switch gears for a minute to Andrew and some of the cool stuff Andrew's done with Domino that doesn't have a Notes client really on the front end of it, right? Is that correct, Andrew?
I would have to guess 90% of everything I do anymore, and probably for the last several years, has no Notes client, and the users who use it don't use Notes anymore.
So what exactly is it that you've built?
There's a couple things. It's funny, you know, I have a software as a service kind of product that I do for the fire department stuff called Second Signal. And that's one that's essentially, this is a web service. This is you sign up, a department pays a monthly rate and they use the environment. It's kind of a tricky environment. It basically involves a remote PC sending data to my servers. It includes kind of audio from local fire radio that they're, you know, their dispatch radios, and it relays information from that out to cell phones when calls come in, so that people know that a call happened if they're outside the range of their dispatch radios. It allows them to call in and listen and catch up to the call and find out if that's something they need to go to. And so it's a combination of quite a few different technologies to make that happen. And I really have always found Domino to be, at the back end, just this incredibly versatile all-in-one platform to get those services. You can't compare it to any other piece of software. You'd have to compare it to sort of a Linux server with all of the services that are usually included in a Linux server in order to just get that same functionality. That's really how I view Domino anymore, is almost an operating system to itself.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about APIs before. Andrew, are you doing stuff with kind of building your own APIs based on Domino with your product?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the sort of modern way that we do that with a web app, of course, is web services in a lot of cases. And, you know, people move to RESTful APIs and things. In this case, I've got Visual Studio at the front end on the workstations that are out on the in the remote end gathering data, because it gives me this really nice installer. You know, it gives me a very easy standalone platform that kind of anybody can install very quickly. But, you know, you need to talk to the back end with it. And one of the really cool ways to do that is with web services. You know, I created my object model, and I drop it in a web service agent on the back end of Domino. And I can literally drag and drop that WSDL file that Domino produces into Visual Studio and instantly have an interface to use all of that functionality. You don't even have to do anything. You know, you drag that object over and the class is already generated for you in Visual Studio, and you can just start calling it and interacting with your server. So there's just this huge synergy that happens with that gives you that front end functionality, that real slick, you know, front end that everybody's used to, but you don't lose that security and that agent processing and the manageability that you get with Domino and the replication.
Yeah, and see, that's one of the things I have always thought has been so interesting about Domino is that, you know, even though we tend to live in a world where we're creating notes apps in one way or another, I mean, even when we talk about X Pages now, we're still talking about creating a notes app, essentially. You know, we're containing all of the design and everything like that within the app itself, whereas Domino is actually a fantastic platform just for, you know, data storage and security, and you can put whatever other kind of front end you want to on it, but you can very easily build just the data part of it in the back end.
Well, that's right. I mean, think about what you get when you install. I mean, you know, you take a couple of Domino servers on Linux or on Windows, and you know, instantly you've got that cluster replication, and you've got failover capability real quickly. You've got very, very high reliability. You've got a tremendously granular level of security. To do all of that, you know, with a relational database model with, you know, Perl plus MySQL, you know, PHP MySQL combination under Apache, you've got a lot of work to do. You know, there are other tools coming. Obviously, CouchDB is kind of the one I'm most favored into looking out toward the future at. But there's very little out there, even after all these years, that can touch what someone who knows what they're doing can do with a Domino server on the back end. And I've been doing this my big thing has always been, you know, secure extranets, kind of other companies' versions of partner world for their partners. Only, you know, I don't have the downtime or the crazy number of servers to invest in. So it has to be very, very stable with just one or two servers.
Exceptional web experience just came to mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without all the exceptions that you get with Partner World.
Exception-free web experience.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, personally, when I worked at Sharp, I built an entire back-end system that was the go-between SAP and SQL Server. And unfortunately, I just heard that they're rewriting it, not because it sucks, but just because I guess I'm not there anymore. And someone decided that, you know, they wanted to keep others employed and, you know, spend more money. But I'm not going to go there. Very cool. So the truth is the truth. I mean, what other kinds of things do you guys know about that people have done with Domino that you just don't ever hear about? Bob?
Well, the thing about Domino is you do anything with it. It's the everything platform.
I mean, give me some examples, I mean, that you could talk about, either one of you.
Well, mine manages a PBX.
I have a friend who installed Domino on an Xbox and runs it as part of his website.
That was that's been around for a couple of years now, right? That was
Daniel
Neshed, or I don't know if that pronunciation.
It's part of his cluster. Yeah,
yeah.
But of course, you know, Domino as a gaming platform. That's just, you know, no one ever talks about that.
Yeah,
it would make a good back end for a big gaming platform because of the replication and the ability to load balance and things like that. You know, the clustering and load balancing would obviously, you'd need to make a front end unless you planned to make, I guess with HTML5, you could start to do that, but make even the front end with it. But realistically, as a back end platform, it's incredible for stuff like that. You can distribute it, you know, even geographic distribution, you know, real-time cluster replication across geographies for some kind of a shared multi-purpose game would be really cool. And I know a few people have tried it.
The Navy uses it in the Pacific Fleet to transfer files from ship to ship over very low bandwidth satellite connections.
Was that on WikiLeaks?
No.
Oh, okay. No, you know, I mean, I hear a lot. I mean, there's a company in the UK that has some type of taxi service that you can text your location and so forth to the service, and it'll send a cab your way. And I know the back end's all Domino. I don't know if it's called Texi or something. I don't have that name at hand, but it's very cool. And it's been around for a while. And again, it's all back-ended on Domino. So if any of you listeners out there have some really cool Domino server-only apps going, you know, things that there aren't really a user interface for other than, say, services or like other databases and so forth, chime in the comments. So if we can go on to Lotusphere. I've always been interested in the history of the culture that, Andrew, you've been a big part of for a long time. So what is the cultured and where did it get started?
Well, cultured started with Rocky, Oliver, and Henry Newbery quite a few years ago. And CULT stands for Certified Unofficial Lotusphere T-Shirt. And, you know, the idea was to just have some fun with a shirt. You get some sponsors who will pay for them and pass them out. And just, you know, maybe poke fun at people, maybe just have some fun. You know, it tends to be kind of silly. They're not the most attractive shirts ever. That's certainly true. But they're just kind of a fun thing at Lotusphere. It's part of the experience, part of the family experience at Lotusphere. And Henry had to become uninvolved in those in about, about 2004, I guess, was the first one I did. So I picked it up from him in terms of the design. And Rocky's had a lot on his plate recently. So the last few years, I've kind of been doing those mostly myself, although Rocky still's kind of involved. And as he gets more time available, we'll get back involved. But the idea is that every year, you know, we come up with a theme for the shirt, some kind of campy kind of front logo that's we hope for has some humor to it. We do a top 10 list. Again, we look for some humor. We sometimes hit and sometimes miss. And we get the sponsors. The sponsors get their logo on the back of the shirt and usually either a website link or a booth number or something. When you see these shirts, keep in mind, you know, go up to thank the sponsors because really they don't get business from it. You know, they do it just to kind of generally be part of the community. And it works out real well. Everybody has a good time.
Mm-hmm. And the theme of this year's shirt, is it known yet?
It's only known to me right now. I'm kind of thinking this is going to be a very fun year. And I don't generally tend to give it out. Kind of, it's kind of always a big deal every year to see the first ones when you start getting off the planes in Orlando Airport and a few of us start to wear them. I try not to let the cat out of the bag really until Orlando. It's kind of a difficult thing to keep secret. There are some really interesting trivia. It's made, the manufacturer I use to do the screen printing is actually the same one that IBM uses for a great deal of the staff shirts. And several of the people who are doing booths use. So sometimes when I'm down doing the proofs, I get some sneak pictures of some of that stuff early, and I've been known to post that. It's really kind of a fun experience. It's a lot of work.
What was last year's theme?
Last year's was the Lotus Nose.
Ah, that's right.
That was the giant nose on the front of the shirt.
Mm-hmm. Has X Pages made its way onto a shirt yet?
It hasn't been the theme of a shirt. It's been kind of mentioned on the shirts in several cases.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Bob, you know, you've been involved with Lotusphere as what of late?
Oh, lately? Well, originally, you know, I was a speaker at the very first Lotusphere. So I've, you know, been to all of the ones that have happened so far. The last, I don't know, I can't even remember when it started, but I think it was 2006. I was a track manager when I was working at IBM, which means there's a content team that does all of the organization and selection of sessions for Lotusphere. And there's a number of track managers, all volunteers, pulled from the ranks of IBM and couple of exceptional cases from outside of IBM to help with that. And I was doing it as an employee. Then after I left IBM, they asked me to sort of help out unofficially. And so I've continued to do that. We call them track managers. The tracks, you know, are spread across the entire conference and grouped into various themes and purposes. And I've been pretty closely involved with the Jumpstart track for several years now. It's fun. I don't get anything for it, really. Just, you know, sort of set some themes and some directions for the track at the beginning of the season, which tends to start in August sometime. And as abstracts come in, we review them. We, you know, talk with the authors about, you know, little tweaks or changes, or occasionally go out and recruit speakers for sessions I'd like to see, but that no one has submitted anything for. And then we make the selections and review the slides and do all that stuff.
You know, I don't really go to other big conferences anymore in terms of, you know, Microsoft conferences or Salesforce conferences or anything. I've always been kind of curious as to whether these other conferences have so much kind of third-party involvement like this. I mean, like this group of people that just decides they're going to put some t-shirts together every year. Or Bob, even you, who, you know, kind of outside of IBM is working on the track management side of the house and has some kind of backstage pass as far as that goes. I have no idea.
No, I don't. I don't have a backstage pass.
Well, I mean,
I just show up.
No, I mean, not at the conference, but before terms of like being involved with the tracks.
Yeah, it's, you know, volunteer labor.
Well, but it is good to have people out there, you know, like Bob in the community that help to pick those tracks, because the perspective is very different from what might be inside IBM picking the tracks. You know, they're really excited about the things that are exciting internally at IBM, most of which we either don't yet know about or have decided not to really be interested in yet. And so the sort of things that are really exciting in meeting rooms at IBM probably don't always reflect what's exciting outside of IBM.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that. I was thinking, you know, if you asked each person at Lotusphere what are the three things they want to come away with learning from the show, what would you say, Andrew, those three things would be? Well, at least your three things.
Well, you know, you sort of break it out, right? Because there's always people who are there that are already, you know, super duper notes people, right? And they're looking for the latest technology. They want to see the latest how to with X Pages. They want it all wrapped up in a nice bundle so they can take and instantly become X Pages gurus. Or, you know, on the admin side, you know, it's ID Vault and single sign-on, things like this, whatever the new hip thing is. But I'm always amazed at how many people really go there. A, they're either new, they've been sort of moved into a Lotus environment that they inherit, or, you know, they're still struggling with some of the medium level stuff. And we tend to forget that those people, not day to day in our little yellow bubble, really need a lot of that stuff. So some of the things that you'd never think would be really well attended. I once did a basic admin class that packed the room twice and overflowed, and you're just stunned. I thought people would be asleep. So you never really know. It doesn't have to be hip and cool. It needs to be good content. It needs to respect the audience, you know, and it needs to above all be fun, because people learn better when it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree.
LotusScript would be another example. I agree with Andrew on that. You know, on the Jumpstart track, we sort of focus, at least historically, on intro overview material, some stuff people may not have been exposed to before, to get them ready for more advanced sessions later in the week. And go back and forth every year, you know, should we do an intro to LotusScript or not? We don't do it every year, but when we've done it, they've been well attended, surprisingly, really.
You know, I know you guys are mostly developers, but on the admin side, think about this. As a developer, if you wanted to learn an app, you know, you could open up a new notes database, whether on your own or on a little dev server or even on your workstation, right, and start trying to figure out how to code things. Think about the poor admin that gets dumped into the notes environment that's been running for 12 years and said, okay, here, you're in charge of this. You know, he didn't set it up. He's never necessarily been to admin school, or maybe he has, but he didn't make any of the decisions about how it's configured. And he's terrified of touching anything because it mostly just sits there and works. You know, how does he get up to speed and get ready to kind of clean the environment up so that he's ready to adopt some of these new things. And those guys are really desperate for content.
Mm-hmm. Which is why we did the admin boot camps sequence last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, we covered a lot of ground on the show today. Bob, if people want to learn more about you or Drain Google, where would they find that information?
The best place is probably my blog, which is www.bobsblog, B-O-B-Z or Z, depending on where you live, B-L-O-G.com.
Okay.
Bobsblog.com.
Bob.
And there's hints in there on how to email me and so on. I'm generally findable.
Okay. And Andrew, where can people find you?
Probably easiest to email me, which is andrewp@thenorth.com. It's been that way since like 93. Or go to www.thenorth.com/apblog, and you can hit my blog, and that's got all kinds of contact information. Where, you know, and that would be for general questions, or if you know, we've got a couple of spots open if people want to sponsor the culture, the more the better. Anybody needs anything like that, you know, that's where to find it out.
All right. Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, you know, really, thanks, guys, for being on. That was fun. I mean, it's always fun for me to have a developer kind of topic. You know, what we talked about APIs and clouds and things in the beginning. So yeah, it was good having you guys on, and hopefully, you guys are going to have a good end of the year here and in all the cold weather that you live in, and we'll see you both very soon.
Thank you. It was fun.
It's been fun. Give us a call anytime.
Take care, guys. Thanks again.